And can I get Lori to read the 12 steps, please?
You bet. Hi, I'm Lori. I'm a compulsive eater. The 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Lori. And I've asked Lynn Kay to read the 12 traditions, please. Lynn Kay?
Oh, we have to unmute. Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, thank you. I'm Lynn. I'm a compulsive eater. Thank you for asking me and thank you for allowing me to be here today. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Lynn Kay. Appreciate your service. The seventh tradition. According to our seventh tradition, we are self-supporting through our own contributions. We send all contributions in excess of our expenses directly to Region 1 and the World Service Office to help carry the message to other compulsive eaters. Contributions can be made by PayPal, and the link is in the chat. Our first speaker today is Rena. I am turning it over to her now.
All right, and someone's timing me.
Yes, Lori.
Just let me know when I'm 10 minutes in. Hi, everyone. I'm Rena. I'm powerless over food and a lot of other things. You'll hear about some, not all. My plan, we'll see how it goes, is to speak about 5 minutes to let you know that I belong. You're not going to really have a doubt after the first minute, but whatever. I'll go five. And then hopefully I'll have the discipline to stop and talk about what works for me. And then the last five, I'd like to talk a little bit, read a little something from the new body image book, something that I find particularly helpful. We'll see though. I have no idea. Usually I just get stuck in one, but I'm hoping by saying it that it'll like get me to stop talking about myself, but we'll see. Who the heck knows? I'll give a few, and I also, I don't know how to say this except for like, so when I was asked to do this, I said yes. And then I had all this doubt after, and I spoke with my sponsor about it. And the doubt was, I hated when I was coming back from a relapse and going to body image workshops and every speaker was a skinny person. I was like, fuck this, sorry my language, I don't know if that's okay. I was like, I wanna hear from someone who's actually struggling with their body image. Like, I don't need to hear from somebody that's already good to go, you know? I wanna hear someone, you know? And she said, you were asked, you say yes, you share your message. But I also wanna let you know I'm ambivalent. I'd like to see a wider diversity of people giving body image workshops, being, and who's available, who's asked. I just need to say it because I just need to say it. I need to say it so I don't feel icky. That's probably the best reason why I need to say it. I don't think anyone else necessarily needed to hear it, but I needed to say it. So, you know, I was a few pick out moments from my life, you know, so I'm preteen, early puberty, raise your hand if you had early puberty. Like, I feel like almost all of us, like, well, not all on this call maybe, but a lot of the OA calls. And my mom was distressed at my ever-changing body, which meant larger hips. Me and my mom are both pear-shaped. It was terrifying for her. And she put me on diet starting at 9. There was, I won't say the names, but there was a place for a liquid diet. There was a teen weight loss. There was the sign on my bedroom door with like a fluffy animal saying, I'm not fat, I'm fluffy. So, okay. So that's how it started, right? Then I'm a teenager. And I decide, I become, I'm going to use one more bad word and I'm going to try not to again, but what I called fuck you fat. I called it then, that's what I called it, and that's what I still call it. I was going to show my mom I didn't need to be a damn thing like her. I was going to have everything she said I couldn't have, and I was going to have it at any size. I was going to eat what I want, do what I want, and I was actually going to make it a little bit cool. I wore all sorts of punk clothes, and I made it work. Here's the secret I kept for myself. I didn't believe I could say no to anybody because of myself, what I told myself about my size. I believed that I was desperate. I believed that I had to say yes. I had to entertain everybody. I had to always be interesting. I'm not saying I was any of those things. I'm saying this is what I told myself. I don't know if I was all that successful. I was certainly notorious. I don't know if I was popular, but I was notorious. There's that. If there was an award for that, I would have gotten that. Okay, let's fast forward to college. And I'm in the other fellowship, so there's a lot of things that push this story along, you know, in the background. And so I get to college, right before college, I get some kind of cold. I don't know what happened, but for the first time ever, I had a true loss of appetite. I think it was a flu. It was like 3 days. I'm not someone who gets sick and loses my appetite. Who knows? I had some actual fever that had happened, and I got all these compliments. We always knew there was a beautiful girl underneath there. Such a pretty face. Finally, we can see you. Well, whatever FU thing I had going on, it switched. I don't know how fast I went from being a 16 plus to children's size clothes, but it happened pretty quickly before I got to college. And it happened in the middle of my senior year. And then so began my first bout with anorexia. And then the binges started. Well, I always just ate a lot. Like, I wasn't even conscious of my eating. You know, I would sometimes even wonder like, how did I get bigger? I honestly didn't. If you would have asked me, I would have been like, I don't know why. And I really didn't. But then once I was down and I started binging, they were like all out crazy binges going from store, you know, you all know, I don't know if make it seem any worse than it was. You know what I'm talking about. So after a couple of years of the anorexia, then there's the binging, tried to manage it with exercise for a while, as always, because you'll hear this repeated over and over, this cycle. I give up eventually on the calculus. I lose the equation. And then I just go for years of binging, grow. Tell myself I don't care about it, but honestly, I can't look at myself in the mirror waist down, right? And all the feminist theory in the world didn't solve that for me. I wanted it to. I sure knew how to make it sound like it did, but it didn't. Fast forward, a scene I can give is I'm at my law school graduation. I'm graduating. I did very well. I'm getting a lot of awards. I don't know how else to say that, except for all I'm thinking in my like
maybe like a size 16 tight. I'm not going to the special store because at the time there wasn't cute clothes that were bigger. It was Lane Bryant, which didn't work for my personality. And so I'm stuffed into this dress. It's pouring hot. I'm so glad I have the robe over so no one can see that I've sausaged myself. You know, I could have just worn a comfortable dress, but that wasn't in my situation. But here's what I'm thinking sitting there. At least my mom's going to see right now that I can get everything she said I can never get, and I can do it heavy. So I was top of my class. I had a partner there. I had a big job I was going to. And she used to say, it's not that I care what you look like. It's that the world cares what you look like, and you're not going to be able to be successful. And I will tell you, I have such a good relationship with my mom. The messages she got were the messages her mom gave her. I don't even have a tiny bit of resentment against my mom for it, right? She's a part of the society that I'm in. You know, she just happened to, she was the vehicle, you know, and in addition to every billboard I see, right? So so that's what I'm thinking. And then, so after I get all these awards, and I got a lot of them, like a lot, the dean finally says, there's one other award that Rena got. And he goes, I don't know what it means, but the students, there's this like student like paper plate award thing that's in like a student newspaper. And she got this award. I don't know what it means, but apparently it doesn't go along with all the other awards I just told you about. She got most likely to die in a Chris Farley-like fashion. That was announced at my law school graduation. And I will say I was already taking shots that day, so I blacked out what happened after that. I just know that it wasn't easy to take. And I didn't know if it was because of my partying or because of my size or both. But I could tell you that I acted like I didn't care. And still to this day, as I say it, I'm shaking inside. But then I was like, F it, I don't care. You know, I can be big and do what I want. Like that was that. Can I look in the mirror? No. Little problem, sidebar. Do I have an inner life? Do I exist without other people around me? Can I sit with myself? No. So I'm gonna fast forward. I end up, a huge breakup happens a couple years later. And I had this next big, huge loss of appetite that I don't even know where it came from. It was a 9-year relationship that ended. I had no friends. I was in a big city working 18 hours a day at a big firm. And I completely stopped eating. I never had that before where there was none. And I replaced it with alcohol 100%. And I was in a blackout for over 300 days and was in dangerous weight for like a long time. It wasn't good. I don't know how else to explain that, but it was horrific. And eventually that rolled me into 12-step recovery. So there you go. You can only be a blonde, at the time I was blonde, I no longer color my hair, but blonde, emaciated girl alone in downtown Chicago with an American Express card for so long with so many drugs and so many strange people waking up with them. And I will tell you this, just so you know what kind of compulsive eater I am. I would rather go home with a stranger than risk coming home and binging in a blackout. That's who I am. And I need to say that so I don't minimize my disease because I can minimize it. Fast forward. I get into program. I eventually get abstinent. It takes a long ass time, right? And I replay the cycle I just told you inside of program. I've been in program where for years I didn't get my period following a food plan, not wanting to acknowledge that I was just living in my disease in this program. And then I had years of on and off binging, leaving program, coming back. It's been a road. But today is day 350. And for those 350 days, here's what I'm going to tell you. I haven't lost my period. For 350 days, I haven't looked in the mirror and told myself I'm disgusting. For 350 days, I don't know what I weigh. I don't know how many calories I'm eating. So how did that happen? I honestly don't really know. I'm just going to tell you some things. But and you know what? Every relapse I've had, I've learned so much. So I don't want it to sound like it's like I've been going nowhere and suddenly I'm here. Everyone has a different journey. Some people get it and it sticks. For whatever reason, my journey has been different. But those relapses have taken me to other places that have turned out, looking back, like where I needed to go. But they were miserable, isolating, painful times. I don't want to minimize that either, you know? Because if I could just be heavy and be okay with it, maybe I could be okay, except for that I can't choose people over food. I don't know how to do that in this disease. So I don't go anywhere, right? So that's me. So what happened?
You know, you have 5 minutes left.
Great. So I didn't follow anything that I planned to do. But so I'll just go fast forward. But thank you. What I want to say, the most important thing is that I have never had an abstinent day, not one, not ever, hating my body. I know some people can be in this program for years and talk about hating their body. I can't do it because it's too painful for me and I end up shoveling food. I don't know how to live with that kind of discomfort. So I had to get okay with myself when I was quite a bit bigger, mushier, whatever, bigger hips. I had to get to the point where I felt that I was loved and lovable, not just by a higher power, not just by you all, but everybody everywhere. I had to be able to move through the world and have a full life at the size I was. I had to go buy cute clothes at the size I was. I had to let go of the fantasy that I would be happier if, or better if. And if my size changed, I don't know. Like, would it be good or bad? I honestly don't know. I had to let go, I say it so many times, of being compliment skinny. As a matter of fact, a couple of weeks, about a month and a half ago, met up with a friend I hadn't seen for a while, and she actually was like, she looked me up and down and she said, "You're looking good." And my husband, because of the pandemic, I had him do this in supposed health. I have him blind weigh me and he knows the numbers. I don't know what the numbers are, but if it's too low, like if within, even with, I have a fence around too low now, right? And so if it's even within the fence, he says, "You're in the fence, do what you need, you know, stop moving, add more, whatever," you know, and work with your sponsor on that. And I know now when someone's complimenting me on my size, more likely than not, I'm too small for what allows me to have long-term recovery in the life that I want. And that means juicy sex, my period, smiling with people, right? And not just thinking about food and also being miserable with people, all of it, all the time, right? Like that to me is recovery. And that doesn't mean that like not having sex would be not recovery. At some point I'm going to have menopause, all those things. It's just that I've sat in this program so deep in the anorexia and not even knowing it and just being like, but I just have to follow this food plan or I'm going to go back to, you know, I have a lot of compassion for that part of me, but I also like, I'm determined this time to not let that happen again and to be honest about it all the time. So letting go of being wanted, the idea that I need to be wanted, that I need to be envied, all I want is to be connected and real, like at the end of the day. And I realized I can't do that in a rock hard body. Not that my body ever was rock hard. I'm just going to say that it wasn't that kind of, for whatever reason, it never went down that way. Nonetheless, that never brought me closer to people. Who's the person I want to be close with in the room? The person that feels warm and real and comfortable, not the person that's whose thighs don't touch, for God's sakes. Maybe I do, maybe I don't, but that's certainly not why of it. So okay, because I'm almost out of time, probably like in a minute, what I want to do is just read two little, I write my own step stuff because it doesn't work for me what's in the big book. I first do the big book work, don't worry, I do it. And then I have to write it over to like repeat it in a way that works for me. I used to pretend I understood what was in the book. I still don't understand what's in the book. So here are the things I say before I go to bed every night. I got different ones for the morning, but we don't have much time. I give myself permission to like my body. I give myself permission to be any size and average sized. I abstain from being compliment thin. I have zero secrets. Help me be willing to take whatever action I need to take. More food, less food, more exercise, no exercise, different food choices, whatever. To stay within a weight range that protects me from the symptoms, physical, spiritual, and emotional of my disease. I give myself permission to love my body exactly as it is, whatever it is. There is truly nothing to fear about potentially having a bigger body, wider hips, or any other bigger parts. I have to read this every day, early and often. I got a few other versions of it. And the last thing is part of my abstinence, not only do I abstain from compliment thin, I abstain from billboards, I abstain from fashion magazines, I abstain from the minute I see in my Facebook feed anything diety, as much as I can't look at chocolate chip cookies, and if it's on your food plan, that's great. Like, honestly, I have plenty of friends who that is. It's just not for me. So I hide it. I also hide people in bikinis that are ads. Real people that I know, fine. But I'm not available to be sold anymore the image of who I'm supposed to be. Because I can't handle it. I can't handle a lot of the modern food, the stuff sold in the middle aisles. I also can't handle the modern image of what I'm supposed to be like. So I think that's it, if I'm done with my time. But I do want to recommend, in the Body Image, Relationship and Sexuality book, page 12 is like my favorite. So it goes through all the steps on body image. It's so effing good. So I was going to read that, but now I'll just send you there. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Rena. Great share. Our second speaker today is Dawn, and I'm handing it over to her now.
Okay, thanks, Lori Lee. Hey, everyone. Hi, I'm Dawn. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm a recovering compulsive eater in Portland, Oregon. It must be a theme. I'm nervous, too. And I had doubts about being able to speak at this, not to crosstalk, but I had the same thing. I even tried to give Lori an out, which really was, if I was honest, my way of asking, like, am I good enough for this, you know? And I will say that, you know, I am good enough for this because I can speak to, I can speak to body image stuff. I can talk about this. I'm one of you. I'm a compulsive eater. I have been my whole life. And I am currently what would probably be deemed fat. I don't like to use the term overweight. I don't like to use the term, obese. I would just say I'm fat. And, so I'm here to represent that aspect, I suppose, of recovery. And one thing I will say for sure, I was talking with my recovery partner. Oh, and by the way, Lori, can you tell me 5 minutes before then? Okay, thank you. I was talking to my recovery partner slash, I don't know, we call it fellow OA traveler, about how one thing I know for sure is that body image recovery is not at all connected to how big or how small you are, because I lost large amount of weight once, almost 200 pounds. I kept it off my body for a long time. It did not cure me of my body image issues and fears and body dysmorphia and all the things that you want to call it. And, I am working now on recovery with my body image stuff in the context through OA and, kind of like doing it in as its own work, as its own like almost subset within the program. And I think that the fact that the program put out a book, which Rena was just referencing, which there's a bunch of meetings that study it. I help get one started on Tuesday nights out of Portland. Lori does a great one out of Montana on Thursday nights that's just for women, the one on Tuesday nights for everyone. You know, the fact that OA made a book that talks about body image, relationships, and sexuality, I believe was a huge piece of acknowledging how much that is its own part of, you know, compulsive eating and, disordered eating, however you want to call it. Anyway, okay, quick backstory. I definitely belong here. I grew up in Los Angeles. I don't live there now. That's why I keep the Hollywood sign sometimes at meetings. It's a good kind of tongue-in-cheek way for me to point out that anybody from the Southern California area, anyone who grew up at all in Los Angeles for any time will understand how it's kind of created. Oof, I'm going to swear once, it fucks with your head. Hollywood is centered there, and a lot of the programming that is put out into the world and, the brainwashing about what women are supposed to look like, you know, comes out of there. And it definitely is celebrated pretty much in Southern California, I would say. Spent a long amount of my life trying to be what I consider to be an acceptable body size, have had pretty much from the age of 10 on felt fat and bigger than other my cohorts in school, started to feel uncomfortable in my body as a female, have struggled with that, trying to feel like I'm okay in my body, no matter how I express my gender or any aspect of myself. You know, a lot of it is, I would say, just trying to be at peace in my body, period. Okay. Then you throw in, my mother was always dieting. Then you throw in, my grandmother was always dieting. Then you throw in, my aunt was always dieting. And the fact that the two men in my family were always larger sized and eating whatever they wanted, but all the women were trying to get smaller and doing all these pain weight programs. And, you know, I really got indoctrinated, I would say, into believing that that was how a woman related to their body and food. My mother ate exceptionally disordered, still does, I love her dearly, I don't blame anyone in my life for any of this. I really, if anything, blame the larger picture, which we've all created together, the world in which we all exist, the world in America, and how, the diet culture in America, and the fixation on a certain body size being the certain accepted aesthetic. Anyway, not to get too political, but there's a lot of politics in it too. You know, for me in OA, I came in and out of these rooms starting about probably in my college years. I'm 52 now. I knew I belonged here the minute I went to a meeting. You know, my mom was in Al-Anon and ACA, so I kind of got introduced to 12-step through that. But I remember when I came into OA, it was just like, there's no doubt I belong here, you know? But man, I didn't want to do what needed to be done to be here and to be actively working this program. Honestly, I wanted, like they say, an easier, softer way. I've been trying to fix my relationship with my food and my body since I was in my like early teens by external means. And I would say that the shift in that in the last, you know, almost 3 years, a little over 3 years now since I've been back in program, is that I'm doing it internally, you know, and maybe other things I've done in my life, like large amounts of therapy, okay, you know, all range of healing modalities and, you know, non-traditional means, all of that helped me get to the point where I'm at now. I think it's why I'm still on the planet, you know, but, you know, now I'm doing it. It's like me and God are having a conversation, you know, and you're all conduits for it. That's how I feel. Anyway, okay, I had like notes on what I wanted to talk about. So if I'm all over the place now, I apologize, but there's so much to cover. Okay, I don't weigh myself. I don't weigh myself. Weighing, as I tell my sponsees, the scale is not an actual tool in this program. Food plan is, talking to people is, going to meetings is, literature is, but you know, it's not up to me. I really say this, it's up to my higher power, you know, who I choose to call God, all right? It's up to my higher power, what I weigh. I don't want to know, you know? Unless there's an actual reason that someone needs me to know, I don't want to know anymore. Because I lived and died by the number on that scale. I mean, I lost 190 pounds at one point doing a liquid diet, totally not in program. I carried around the thing that recorded my like weight loss to prove to myself, I don't know, I was so proud of it. I would tell anybody who came within like 2 feet of me that I had lost 190 pounds, you know, for years, all right? Okay, you know, that didn't fix this, you know what I mean? And when I was walking around in a smaller body, I was still judging it, you know, like I was like, oh, you know, I have stretch marks, you know, and I was in fear. I would like sit on the toilet and look and, oh my God, it's growing. My stomach's growing. I would obsess at night. I would think my stomach is growing. I can feel it, you know, I can feel it. Anyway, okay, things I want to talk about. My recovery lies somewhere between fierceness and tenderness. That's what I'm coming to realize. My recovery with my body image does too. You know, one of my healers said to me, you know, coming into this year, I hope you're harder on yourself in some ways and easier on yourself than others. And I took that in a really weird way, but I was thinking about it. It's true. You know, here's where I need to be fierce. I need to be fierce and I need to protect myself from anything that harms me. And that includes my own mind. You know, that includes my own thoughts and ideas. Here's where I need to be tender. I need to love and accept myself and others no matter what, you know, even when I don't like what people are doing or saying, I have to accept them, you know? And part of this leads into how I am trying to work with my body, which is right now I am, like I said, fat. I would call myself fat, comfortably say that. And I'm 52 and I've had knee injuries, not a great combination, okay? So I know that my body will operate better and feel better in a smaller, you know, at a smaller, lower weight, whatever you want to say. I try not to say too triggering words in that way or judgmental words. But I also know that it is really important that I love me the way I am right now. I want to preach that. I want to preach that to my sponsees, to anyone willing to listen, you know? But that doesn't mean that comes easily to me. It for sure doesn't. I mean, I cannot stand before you or sit before you on Zoom and say that I have that. I work on that daily, like truly. I've got post-its everywhere. I've got words all over my body. I come to meetings. I talk about it. I have a partner in recovery who is also doing deep work on learning to love and accept themselves where they're at while also making loving choices. I'm learning to not abuse myself. And part of that is using food to like, you know, fill myself on a spiritual level, but using it, you know, like in my mind, somehow I got it twisted that filling myself physically and making myself physically stuffed will make me somehow spiritually fuller, you know, but I'm working on like, you know, disconnecting that stuff. Anyway, because of that, here, I have more notes. Oh God, I hope I have enough time to, okay, I'm not gonna look at that.
You're at 5 minutes now, 5 minutes, 5 seconds.
All right, 5 minutes, 5 seconds, okay. By the way, I'll put my number in there if anyone wants to talk to me about this stuff at any point. I rewrote part of, it kind of came to me in a fury, part of, I think it's the 10th step promise. I don't know, I'm not a big book thumper, so I don't totally know everything, but you know, it's okay. So I wanted to share this, what I rewrote. I put this up on my mirror. This is part of my recovery, and I'm not doing a great job at this moment of I feel like communicating, but here's what I wrote for myself that I say to myself too. I am a beautiful functioning organism created with love by the universe. I have ceased fighting anything or anyone, especially my body, as sanity has been restored. I am no longer interested in abusing my body, participating in fat shaming or dieting if tempted. I recoil as from a hot flame. I deeply and completely accept myself as I am in this day. Acceptance is the answer. So that's like this modified thing that I put up on my mirror. Another thing I want to talk, it helps me. Because I'll just say, you know, like people say, you know, people call this brainwashing. You know, it is. I mean, my brain needs washing on a major level, especially around body image stuff. Oh my God. That's why I'm here. That's why I go to this body image meeting. I mean, that's why I wanted to be part of this, you know? Okay. So one thing I wanted to talk about was one thing that I've heard said, and one of my OA fellows talks about this, is that if that part of objectifying, being objectified, right, is also objectifying others. Okay, so I don't want to objectify myself anymore. I want to be the spiritual, I want to be connecting with my soul, right? And I want to do the same with others. So if I'm objectifying other women, if I'm looking at them, if I'm comparing and despairing, right, then I'm not connecting with their on a real soul level. And also, that's a way to, if I cannot do it with others, then I can learn to not do it with myself too. You know, so that's what I'm trying to do. Okay. And part of that for me is about being really mindful now, especially I wanted to make sure to talk about this coming out of pandemic, coming out of quarantine, of not commenting on others' bodies. I'm trying to be, for me, I'm realizing, because I have most likely gained some weight. I definitely did have to buy a bigger pair of underwear, bigger size underwear in the last year, you know, and that's okay. And I, you know, but I have this like fear people are going to comment, right? So here's where I can start. I can't control what others do, right? But I know that I cannot comment on others. And that includes not commenting when someone has gotten thinner, right? Which I had that recently come up where I saw someone and they had lost a noticeable amount of weight. And I was so proud of myself that all I talked about was like, oh man, like your face, you got great color and you look really, you know, like I did not go there. I did not talk about someone's size because I don't do that anymore. Okay. Do I have any time left, Lori? Or am I completely, I got 2 minutes. Perfect. Okay. So in the last two minutes, I guess what I want to say is that, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to get my hands all the way around this. I don't know if I'm ever going to, you know, be able to, here's one of my dreams. I want to be able to go buck naked, you know, in the river or in the ocean with people and not give a shit what I look like. Truly, you know, Portland does a naked bike ride. I would like to get to the point where I can do the naked bike ride and not care what's flapping, you know, just be in the moment. And I also hope that I'm able to get some healing around, you know, some physical healing with my body too, you know, but I'm where I'm at today. Like, I don't know what I'm going to be at tomorrow. You know, I only know I can do like this work today with you. I cannot go into the food, you know, I'm not going to go into the food tonight. I know that when I close the kitchen is closed. I don't binge anymore. You know, I choose to abstain from alcohol too, because for me, that just enables the binging, you know, and, yeah, I mean, all that's in my control is right now with all of you. And so therefore, I will just end by saying, you know, my hope is that I can be as much present in my life, no matter where I'm at. I can meet myself no matter where I'm at, you know, and hold a loving space for myself. And that is like truly the work I'm doing in this program. And I thank you all for being part of this, and I cannot wait to hear Karen R. share now, because trust me, I'm so thrilled to be sandwiched, sorry, no pun intended, between these two amazing, powerful, dynamic women that I get so much from, truly. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dawn. That was a wonderful share. And next, last but not least, we have Karen, and I will pass it over to her right now.
Okie doke. Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Umbelimek. It's good to be here. And I will totally go running naked into the river with you, number one. Number two, I am also really happy to be sharing with Rena and John here, because you are both of whom I know through the program and really, really like and really appreciate. And I think you're both very funny. And with that, I'm going to talk about me. So, what I thought I'd do is talk about body image within the context of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so I'm first going to start just by giving you a super brief history. I'm originally from New York. I got into program 33 years ago in New York City. My abstinence is not binging and purging, not binging, not purging, that is. I've been abstinent for 33 years. Within that very broad definition of abstinence, a lot has happened. I'm going to say that just today, just for today, like, I really like my body. Do I love it? Like, I might not love it, but I like it. And I really do appreciate it. And what I do love are all of the things that I can do. So I'm 60 years old. I can bike, I can hike, I can do handstands, I can do yoga. You know, I can like do all of these things that are so much, you know, so much fun for me, that if they were taken away from me, it would really hurt me. Like, I just wouldn't have as much fun in life. And I've recently been helping my mom, who's 86 and who recently fell and broke her arm. And I see what she can't do. And when I sit around, which I do, and like grab, you can't see, but grab like the little roll that goes over my jeans, I'm like, Karen, like, what are you doing? Like, she can't even walk. Like, you can do freaking anything. So do we really care about the roll hanging over your jeans? Not so much. And so I get perspective, and I feel like I have perspective. Like, I'm not going to say that I have an accurate view of my body, like perfectly accurate. But I think it's way better than it was 30 years ago. You know, like, I perceive myself, as I've said this in meetings, like a medium-sized person. Which is not fun for an addict. Like, there's nothing dramatic about that. It's not extreme. I'm not amazingly thin, and I'm not really fat. And there's like, there's no project I can make out of it right now to take myself out of life. But what was I going to say with that? So, however, like, I look at pictures from a year ago. Okay, so being 60 is also not so much fun in terms of like what happens with your body and how the equation really doesn't work anymore. But like, I'll think like, oh, I can't go, like, I'm so pissed off, I can't wear that anymore. Da, 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 da. I'll look at a picture from a year ago and be like, wow, that, you know, you look really great. And remember thinking that I thought about myself the same way I do today. And that's how I know I still have a twisted view of myself. You know, I have to prove it to myself. Anyway, so that's my background. I'm going to read something actually from the body image book, which is Body Image, Relationships, and Sexuality, that we've been referring to. At the very beginning of the book, which is in the body image section, it says, before recovery, many of us were ashamed of or even hated our bodies. Perhaps when we looked in the mirror, we heard a parent's critical voice or taunts from grade school classmates. Perhaps we became convinced no one could be attracted to us because of our weight, our body shape, or our loose skin, or the effects of aging. So as a kid, I definitely did hate my body. I thought I'd never be okay unless I was thin. The messages I got were, you'll be happy when you lose weight. You'll be happy if you're thin. You'll get a boyfriend if you're thin. The message was clear, thin equals happy. I got that from my parents, you know, who were not trying to torture me. That's just what they believe themselves. They both dieted. They were both body obsessed. You know, I got all the messages of like, wear dark, solid clothes. Don't wear horizontal stripes. Don't wear cuffed pants, blah, blah, blah. Like all the tricks to look thinner, 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 because it's better somehow, right? There's something else that I highlighted in the book that says like, I'm just going to read it. There have been moments when I stood in front of a full-length mirror and imagined cutting off pieces of my body with a knife. I used to look at skinny girls and believe they were immune to pain and discomfort. So I used to lie down on the floor and imagine a knife, like the outline of my body that I would like to have. And all of my girlfriends were skinny. And I thought they were all very happy, happy and skinny. I later learned, we're all still good friends. There were five of us. I later learned that two of them were puking throughout high school. Not so happy, but I didn't know that. Because I compare myself, you know, I compared my insides to their outsides, which is always a losing game. Let's see, just like the effort to be thin in order to quote unquote be happy led to starvation diets. I wrote myself contracts in college that I wouldn't eat for 6 days. I could have tab. I would just smoke cigarettes and drink tab. And I'd have one light beer at night. This was in college. And a tiny bag of like chips. And I would write at the end of the contract, you know, and if you don't follow this for 6 days, you are a weak person. And then I'd have a line, I'd type in my name underneath, like for signature, a little bit compulsive. I did that a lot in college. I dieted a lot. I got a lot of mixed messages. Like I got, let's see, I did my junior year abroad. I was in Paris. I love to dance, and I was in a dance class there. And I remember the instructor with a microphone saying in English, where is the fat American girl who can dance? Come on up front, you know, to demo something. And I was like, he likes me, I'm a good dancer. Like, how can I possibly go up there? I'm the fat American girl. And there were like 100 people in this class. And I got that message a lot, like mixed, always mixed messages. Anyway, after college, I moved to New York City, the exercise bulimia kicked in. It was like the 1980s, land of the aerobics. I zigzagged my way all over the freaking city, going from class to class to class to class, jumping and jumping and jumping. I'd get to class early so that I could get my spot. I was that really obnoxious person that everyone probably couldn't stand, although maybe didn't even think about because they were thinking about themselves. They weren't thinking about me. But I was that obnoxious person who was like there really early and would stand in front and like da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that was me. And I lost a lot of weight and I became like a hard body and I lost my period. I didn't get it for 5 or 6 years, I think. I started like shopping. I was ecstatic, right? I could wear everything that I could never wear before. I'm a skinny girl. And that's when I came into program because I proved to myself that I could be just as miserable and just as crazy, really thin. And the myth was just that. It was not true. You'll be happy if you're thin, not true. And so at my thin, and I love my body. I thought I looked fucking awesome. See, I can curse, we're cursors, which I like. Anyway, so I proved that it wasn't true. I finally got into program because I felt crazier than, I love my body and felt crazier than I had ever been. And I was deeply afraid of losing the relationship I was in, which was with my now husband. So I didn't lose it, but I might because we were arguing before this workshop started. So I'm a little tense because of that. Anyway, so I was scared of that. I came into meetings. Okay. And I was really hoping to learn how to relax. I was looking for balance and flexibility. My body didn't really change that much as I cut my exercise in half. I started eating 3 meals a day. I started eating things that I hadn't eaten in a really, really long time that were scary foods, but I wanted to be able to eat sometimes. I ate with people in program. I went to a zillion meetings. I did what they said. I came early, stayed late, shared at every meeting, and did service. I was, let's see, I guess over time, I started to learn how to trust. So I started to learn how to trust the process in program, and I started to learn how to trust people. And then life went on. I was kind of, I'd do a lot of program, a little program. I had two kids. I stayed abstinent through this. I stayed in touch with program, even when I wasn't like diligent about it.
Karen, you have 5 minutes left.
Sounds good. And, you know, my body image was okay. Like through the pregnancies, it was okay. And I wasn't, you know, I was still kind of like, how come? Like, I'm never going to be that person with a little basketball in pregnancy. I was the person whose like boobs were like, each of my boobs were as big as my stomach. I felt like, I just felt gigantic. But now I look back again at pictures and I'm like, oh, you were so cute when you were pregnant. Like, so, you know, who knows? Not me. And then, let's see. Yeah, I was pretty much the same around, you know, after I had kids, I was, which was my second was, I was like 37, I think, and now I'm 60, and my body pretty much stayed the same up until like 2 years ago. And I thought, and that was remarkable. You know, I was like, I don't have to diet anymore. Like I dieted my whole life. What a relief. I don't have to do that. And I don't weigh myself. I weighed myself once since I came into program. It was such a bad idea. And so I don't do that. And I guess for today, like I'm still frustrated. Like I feel like I have the food thing and the exercise thing well practiced. You know, like it doesn't trip me up a lot. I'm not worried about what I'm gonna eat, when I'm gonna eat, with whom I'm gonna eat, what they're gonna serve. Like I really don't give a shit. I still though have the body image stuff. And I just, you know, I try not to compare myself to 20-year-olds because that's stupid. But I still do it. I go to yoga almost every day. I look at myself in the mirror. I stand up in front. I'm still in that same spot, however many years later, partly because I can't see that well anymore though. And it's still really hard for me to trust that if I just work on my insides, then my outsides will take care of themselves or will be taken care of by my higher power. You know, I still do body checks. I check my stomach. Is it flat? Is it not flat? Why isn't it flat? And who cares if it's flat? I don't know. 4 years ago, though, I seemed to have a little bit of a body change. I had surgery, I had a brain tumor, and it wasn't malignant and it wasn't cancerous. It was, but it's still traumatic, right? And I had it removed. And then I slowly recovered over like the next maybe 10 months or so. And since then, I haven't really felt the same in my body. I just feel like stuff has changed. And then there's menopause. And who even knows? Like, why am I trying to figure this out? The equation still doesn't work, you know? It doesn't matter. It could be any one of these things or all of them or none of them. It's just like where I am today is okay. And I really want to remember that every day. Like I'm not limited in what I can do at my age. And that is fucking amazing. So be happy, Karen. This is good. If I can just keep moving as I get older and older, you know, like my biggest fears are that I won't have the opportunity to do what I want to do while I'm healthy enough to do it. So those are my fears. Work on my fears. Do a fear inventory. Like just don't get stuck in it. And I guess that's the recovery. Like I feel like I don't get stuck in stuff anymore. There's a way through. And even though sometimes I feel fat or I don't feel attractive necessarily, it doesn't keep me from socializing. It doesn't keep me from swimming. It doesn't keep me from going to the beach or dancing or doing sports or like, you know, I heard someone say in a meeting the other day that they feel hostage by their size and that they're too fat for the party. And I can honestly say, I do not feel held hostage by my size and I'm not too fat for any party. Take me to the party. You know, ultimately it's kind of all about vulnerability for me. I was very protected by either my fat or by my muscles. They were just walls. And it's still scary to be vulnerable. And I don't know, it's probably always going to be scary to be vulnerable. I have one other thing that I highlighted in this book that I wanted to read that says, it's in the part that Rena mentioned, page 12 and 13, where it's called Working the 12 Steps on My Body Image. And there's this one part around step 12. It says, I carry the message of OA as a sponsor. I change my inside so that God can take care of my outside. I hope I can get there. You know, that's like, that to me is really being trusting. And I'm just still a skeptic in the end. And that's all I got. So thanks for letting me share, everybody. Bye.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Karen. Wonderful, another wonderful share. Okay, this is the time to ask questions. If you would like to ask a question, please raise your hand and I will call on you and ask you to unmute. We only have 15 minutes for question and answers. There will be a time for sharing in the next hour in smaller breakout rooms. There are two ways to raise your hand depending on what version of Zoom you have. The first one is older versions of Zoom. Click on the Participants tab at the bottom of your screen, and this will open a list of names. At the bottom of this list, there is a raise your hand button. Most recent version of Zoom, click on the Reactions tab at the bottom of the right side of your screen. Once open, you will see the raise hand button at the bottom. We will call on you using the name on your photo. This meeting is being auditorially recorded. So if you are uncomfortable with your name being on the recording, please change your name to protect your anonymity. By sharing or asking a question, you consent to being recorded and having the recording posted on the Montana OA website. After the question and answer period, we will get into the activity. So if anybody has a question, go ahead and put your name in the participant box and I'll go ahead and call on you. We have Lauren will be our first person.
Oh, okay. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate this workshop tremendously. This is a miracle. So thank you for having me be a part. My question is, how do you get started? I've had moments in my recovery, like I've been in and out of program for a few years now, with plenty of relapse and also moments of abstinence. But now I am coming from a relapse and it's so hard for me just to like get started, if that makes sense. I do appreciate the shares in regard to being tender with myself. So my disease is so militant and that does tend to pull me out of program, if that makes any sense. But I just want to know, what would you say to a newcomer? Like, how do I just get started? I do need a sponsor and I know that, and I'm open, please, if anyone wants to sponsor, but how do I get started? Thank you. And I'll pass.
Is that to anybody or? Okay, I'll jump in if that's okay. Dawn, recovering compulsive eater again. Lauren, I guess my quick response would be keep coming to meetings. Go to as many meetings as you can fit into your schedule, go to as much variety of meetings as you can find. Right now, obviously that's easier than it was in the past with Zoom and everything. And when you hear things that resonate for you, you know, what they say, when you hear someone who has what you want, ask them how they got it. And, you know, keep putting it out there like you just did, that you're looking for a sponsor. Put your name and number out there if you're willing to take calls, take down numbers. But more than anything, I would say it's about getting to meetings. And I think Karen said it best, you know, come early, stay late, You know, you can even do that on Zoom. You can get there a little early and chat with people. You know, you can stay a little after. And, you know, when you're ready, you know, find a sponsor to work with and do service and share at every meeting. So that's my thoughts on it. Hope that was helpful.
Okay. Our next question is going to be coming from Brenda G.
Hi, Brenda, compulsive eater and restrictor. Thank you, everybody. That was really good. My question, I think, is for Karen. Just when you said the equation doesn't work anymore, I just wondered, maybe I'm using the equation. I just wondered, what's the equation? Just an example of what that is. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. So I guess what I was referring to is, like, I used to think, you know, if I ate this way and I exercised this way, I would look this way. Or if I looked this way, then I would feel this way. And that would backfire. It would work. And then it would stop working. And so for me, this program's just not logical. And I'm so logical. Like, my mind is like an Excel spreadsheet. I love spreadsheets. I love lists. I love highlighting. And I love math. And when it doesn't work, you know, the hard stuff for me is like the ethereal stuff, the God stuff, the intangible stuff. And this program is one of those things. It's just like, I have to just do what people say when they say it works and trust that the result will be a healthier place to be. And not work backwards by picking a result and trying to figure out how to get there. Does that answer it? Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and get Barbara W.
Hi, I'm Barbara W. And I have a bad relationship with food. And and I'm powerless over food. Excuse me, my voice. Wonderful talks by everyone. Really revealing and honest and great. Thank you. I'm so excited about this topic of body image. And I have a question. I heard our first and second speaker, I think, particularly mentioned body image recovery. And I really related to the thing about the hips and puberty. Oh God, I went into puberty at 13. So could you tell me what is body image recovery?
The person who... Oh, sorry, go ahead. Rena, did you have more questions?
No, the person who can answer that question.
So I don't know if I can answer, but I'll take a shot just because I haven't spoken yet. So I'll give it a shot, which is just like, I don't know what someone else's food recovery is. I don't know what someone else's body image recovery is. I know it just has to be the opposite of, just like my food plan has to be the opposite of my disease. My body image recovery has to be the opposite of the things I hate. Like, it has to be the opposite of what I do to myself. But what I do want to say about it, like this beyond like esoteric that was, is that like my rock bottom, like baseline abstinence, there's a lot of details that go along with what it takes for me to be abstinent, right? And what I need to do. But the bottom line is I don't hurt myself with food. So with body image, I don't hurt myself with thoughts about my body. I don't hate myself about my body, and I don't hate other people with respect to their body. Like just the hate has to be out for me. So that, to me, that's like a similar, I view that's like, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, I'm just as powerless over food as I am with obsession about food, weight, and body, about weight and body image. And just like I asked the universe to lift the obsession about food, I asked the universe to lift the obsession about size, appearance, image management.
That's very clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara, for your question. And thank you, Rita, for that answer. Okay, our next person is going to be Kristen B. Kristen B, you are up next.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. I'm Kristen. I'm a compulsive overeater. I want to thank all three of you for speaking today. It's each one of you gave me moments of, you know, feeling emotional. And thank you so much for your honesty. I apologize for my dogs. my question is, I'm curious as, and this is for all three of you and, you know, whoever wants to answer. I'm curious how your process of coming to your body acceptance where you are now, you know, whether that was a process or whether, you know, it happened, you know, how the however the process happened for you, where you came to accept yourself today, if that opened up a feeling of vulnerability for you, or if it opened up a stronger feeling of strength in your program, and how that related to your abstinence and food plan with either the vulnerability or the strength. I'm curious if there was any correlation between all of that sort of coming together. Because I know for me, I get myself set in a certain space and I'm in a sort of a safety bubble right now. And I know that, you know, hopefully God willing, when the weight starts to release more and more, I lose my wall. I lose my safety of the weight. And I'm curious if any of you felt that when you started to just accept your body as.
Oh, is it? Okay, I'm gonna jump in real quick and hopefully maybe others can answer this because this is a good big question. Dawn again, recovering compulsive eater. Okay, so I think I'm answering your question. For me, the work I'm doing for body image recovery is very much centered around my current choice of like recovery partner sponsor, the sponsees I work with, the work I do with them. You know, I get outside help on this too. I read outside literature on things. But for me, a lot of this is about really working this program like from the inside out, I guess, you know, really like showing up for myself day in, day out by, you know, writing a 10th step, you know, checking with my sponsor, my co-sponsor, my sponsees daily, coming to as many meetings, you know, for a while I was going to more than one meeting a day, you know, working the steps. Right now I'm living in 10, 11, and 12, really intimately working with these topics in a group community setting through the body image work meetings that I'm a part of that are literature studies, you know. And then I'll just add this, and I hope this was helpful. And I hope I was answering your question. I might not have, and then I'll shut up. Okay, is it also a big part of this recovery for me is about remembering, and I heard this, that the voice of God is a voice of love. The voice of my higher power is a loving voice. So any other voice I'm hearing is the disease talking. And that includes especially the voices around my body, you know? So, and what I look like and what others look like and all that. So I'll pass that to someone else now.
Thank you, Dawn. Did any of the other panelists want to speak up?
I'll say one thing. I was thinking about it. That was a really interesting question. Thanks, Kristen. You know, I feel like what measures sort of the degree of recovery around a particular issue for me, whether it's like food, exercise, body image, is how much headspace it takes up. So when I'm accepting of my body or when I like it, I just don't even think about it really. And same with food, you know, I don't really think about what I'm going to eat or have to, or I don't really think about exercise. Did I do enough, not enough, relative, you know, all, like none of those gyrations are taking up headspace, which to me is what the program's about, like cleaning out and creating space for healthy living, for connecting, for strong relationships, you know. So it gives me time to, or gives me the opportunity to be in a life instead of in an obsession.
Thank you, Karen.
I was gonna add a little thing to that, just my own, I don't know what, something that I was thinking about, just that the thing I'll add is just like, I don't, for me, recovery with food is like, how do I act with food when no one's watching? how do I act about my body when no one's watching? Meaning, sure, I could say to you all, I'm going to love my body, whatever its size it is. But when I'm home, although, you know, we're all home, but, you know, home, when I'm by myself, I can look in the mirror and either one, feel good about myself because I look smaller, or not let, and I don't allow myself any of it. I mean, it's not just me. Like, it's like, I can't, like, my wish is to, just like I catch myself if I'm thinking I can eat between meals because that doesn't work for me in my recovery. I also, when I like look in a mirror when I'm walking by and I catch myself being like, oh, do I look thinner? Like, why do I care if I look thinner? Why do I want to look thinner? Like, why not just be whatever I am right now? Big, small, you know, like, and so I just wanted to note that part of the recovery is like, whatever they call it in the brain when you're changing your thinking. Like, I work on it just like I do with the food thoughts. I work on the body thoughts in the exact same way. And the last thing I just want to share, because I didn't share it, and it'll make me nuts if I don't, is I'm on a crusade. So here's my crusade. It might be political. Don't worry, it's within a way. If I can ban the phrase service is slimming, I would. That's all I'm going to say. I forget to say it in my lead. And so I got it out now, so I don't take it to bed tonight.
Thank you, Rena. This will be our last question here. We have B2C.
Hi, I'm Fita Sina, a recovering compulsive overeater. I was wondering, at what point did you guys realize that it was a spiritual disease, and at what point did that connect with your weight loss?
I'll jump in on this. Dawn, again, recovering compulsive eater, and hopefully I'll keep it short so others can answer too. At what point did I realize this was a spiritual program? I think that was a question. I will just say that for me, I've been on a spiritual quest, I'd say, since my early 20s. And it seems to me throughout my life that I have found my greatest connection to an understanding of something greater than myself, to a power greater than myself, through working on recovery with my eating and my food. That is where I've always found God was kind of between the error and the energy between other people that are also, you know, suffering and seeking healing. So for me, I think, you know, I'm told it's a spiritual program, but I believe it's a spiritual program because I feel God in these rooms. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, actually I forgot the second half of your question, so I'll let someone else answer.
Okay, I'm just going to say that I guess I know that the answer is spiritual because everything I tried that wasn't spiritual didn't work, and this does. So I kind of back into it as usual, the equation issue.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, we have... Oh, excuse me?
All I said was what she said. I agree.
Thank you, Rena. There's one last question here. Somebody is asking this, all the speakers, if there's any art images that they took, they looked at, that helps their body image, especially if they are large size.
Was that art images? Was that the question?
Art or images that they look at that helps their body image, especially if you're large size.
Well, I'll just say quickly, yeah, part of my recovery with my body image stuff is seeing beauty in all sizes and shapes. And so I mean, not it's outside, but you know, social media, I try and follow people that, are beautiful in all sizes. I try to follow people that promote that. And I also, like someone said earlier, don't look at magazines and things like that. I'm trying to redefine for me what beauty looks like. So I hope that's an answer. Yeah.
Thank you, Lori. Okay, did any of the other panelists have any answers for that?
I'm gonna share, but I'm gonna be honest, but it's uncomfortable. So I actually don't know if it's appropriate. I'm just gonna be honest about that. Raise your hand if it's not. So since I was a little kid going to bed at night, like the fantasy I would have when I was bigger was a fantasy that I made myself smaller. Like the size, I couldn't fantasize about anything unless I already quickly switched my size. Like I was always smaller, looked different.
And so that involved, you know, as I got older, those fantasies changed form. They got a little racier, right? And part of my recovery is if I catch myself morphing my body in my mind with any fantasy, I have to stop. I mean, I get the universe to help me. It's not like I can do that on my own, but like no fantasy. And the images I choose to look at, to the extent I would ever look at an image, I choose to look at images of people that are not underweight or not healthy or that are not what my mom used to call fluffy. And so I'm sharing that, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Thank you, Rena. Karen, did you have any answer for that one? Or
I don't use any images, but I like the idea, and so now I'm going to. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, and that's a wrap up on the questions. I'd like to thank all the panelists that spoke today, Karen and Rena and Dawn. Thank you, ladies, all for your shares, your experience, strength, and hope. It is now time to begin the writing segment of our workshop. I'll pass it over.